Welcome to the Leadership Window Podcast with Patrick Jinks. Each week, through a social sector lens, Patrick interviews leaders and experts and puts us in touch with trends and tips for leading effectively. Patrick is an LSI certified leadership coach, a member of the Forbes Coaches Council, a best-selling author, award-winning photographer, and professional speaker. And now, here's Patrick.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Leadership Window. I'm Patrick Jinks, leadership and strategy coach, president of the Jinks Perspective, and your host on this podcast. It's a podcast about leadership, and as Rosie just said, it is through a social sector lens. That's my background, that's my bent, that's my mission. So we have a lot of social sector practitioners on the show. Today, though, we have just a leadership, what do I call Steve? A leadership expert and lifelong student of leadership. I think that's fair.
I like the lifelong student part.
Yeah, me too. I go by the same thing, always learning. Steve Goebel is the owner and CEO of the Goebel Group, a leadership development organization that serves small to medium-sized businesses and their teams in the central Pennsylvania area. He is passionate about helping people grow and solve problems. He's an author. We're going to talk about his book in just a little bit. He's a founding partner of the John Maxwell team. So that gives you a sense of his leadership expertise and talents. He's a certified human behavior consultant. In 2017, he won an award in central Pennsylvania from the Central Penn Business Journal called 40 Under 40. So he is a young, I can call him young. I can call him that. I don't know if he likes hearing that. I think so. I think he does. But anyway, Steve currently resides in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania with his family. And, he has a unique hobby. He likes petting other people's dogs. There you go. That's what he likes. That's what he enjoys doing.
I do.
And he also enjoys a good pint of IPA or a dram of whiskey. And that's one of the things that makes us such good friends. And no, by the way, despite the fact that he resides in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, he and his family are not Amish. Lancaster County is known by many as sort of the Amish capital of the country, even though there's more Amish in other places, but Lancaster County has done a great job of sort of marketing themselves as that. And it is a really amazing place. I met Steve when I was living in Lancaster County myself, leading the United Way there. And Steve was among all of his leadership activities in his business. Steve is also, a social, supporter himself. He is engaged in his community. And I think that's why I'll let him confirm this, but my sense is that that's why his business is centered on serving businesses in the region. Steve can serve you from anywhere, obviously, but he is very invested in his community through United Way and through a lot of other things. And so that's one of the things I really appreciate about him as well. And Steve, I really appreciate you coming on the show, man. I've been looking forward to it.
No, I'm excited to be here, Patrick. Thanks for the invitation. It's, I wish it could be in person, but you had to leave Lancaster, man. And
I don't miss the cold. Not a bit. I don't miss it. I miss a lot about Lancaster, though. It is an amazingly unique. I grew up in the Army and lived all over the country, and no place more unique than Lancaster County. It is really a great, beautiful, amazing place.
It is, and that's, I'm an import. I'm a military kid as well. That's one of the things that we have in common that we figured out a couple years ago. And it is definitely a great place to raise a family. My wife's from here, so until my mother-in-law passes away, I'm stuck here. But that's not a terrible thing.
No, it's really not. Again, for me, it was the weather. And what I do, those of us, as you know, in our work say all the time, we can serve clients from anywhere. We had a colleague on the show, early on named Forrest Alton. He said, all I need is Wi-Fi in a nearby airport and I can serve from anywhere. And so that's kind of the way of our work. But we're raising families, and we need to be a part of a community that we can enjoy and enjoy life. And I love what you're doing there, man. You really have plugged into the community. And did I make an assumption there? Is most of who you serve in that region, or are you really just all over the place in who you serve in your business?
No, I've made the intentional decision when I started my business to stay, you know, initially on to stay within 2 hours of home, simply because family comes first. You know, I grew up in a single parent household for the majority of my life, and I knew, you know, my wife and I talked about things, and I think every parent wants to give their kids better than what they had. I was always told that, you know, kids grow up so fast. And I've lived by the philosophy, I try to live by the philosophy that, you know, money can be made later.
Yeah.
Now, my business is successful. I know I've left money on the table, but I haven't missed things with my kids. And that's been a priority for me and my wife, because leadership starts at the home. And I have to lead by example with my kids. I've been very intentional about staying within 2 hours of my home. So I'm home for dinner most evenings. Not a lot of overnight trips. So that's, you know, and then having a place in our community, you know, being in the service industry as leaders, we're supposed to serve. And it's easier to do that when you're in the community and you're involved in the community through organizations, that serve the community and be a known entity. It helps just, it not only helps business, but also just the mental psyche of knowing that, you know, there's things that are more important than me in life, and giving back and serving. And that's part of leadership.
Well, you know, those are easy things to say. And so for our listeners, I want you to know, having known Steve now for a number of years, he walks that talk. Everything he just said, if you know him for a week, you know, he absolutely lives that. He, what people are into, if you get to know him a little bit. And Steve is into his family, period. I mean, just that is what he's really into. You know, he's just into it. He loves it. It's that's where he finds his purpose. And he also is a servant leader in his community. So I'm saying that for our listeners, because, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, family comes first and you servant leader, you know, and it's the stuff you're supposed to say, but you really do live this stuff. And I think that's why you have been successful and fulfilled in your business, is because you're clear. I mean, you just laid it out crystal clear what your own business value system is. And that's a key concept of leadership for any leader. It doesn't have to be what you just articulated, but it has to be that clear.
It does. You have to know what you want and then go pursue it. You're a grandfather now, Patrick. That's, you know, you know what it's like. Mm-hmm. You're a father and a grandfather, and it's, you know, you don't get that time back. And years ago, I don't know where I heard it. I did not come up with this, but somebody asked me, how do kids spell love? And the answer was T-I-M-E.
Time. Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, I wish I was smart enough to come up with that, but I want to share that.
That's good.
And because the kids, you know, and going through the last 6 months with COVID, you know, I've been home so much more because I haven't been doing business lunches. I haven't been doing, social events after hours, you know, every now and then. And, you know, we homeschool our kids from the beginning anyway. And I work out of the house most of the time, but, you know, my kids have loved the last 6 months. You know, they're seeing me even more.
Yeah, and I don't want to change the subject really off of family necessarily, but what you're saying, how kids spell love, T-I-M-E, it makes me think our employees spell it the same way. You know, in business, I call it love or whatever you want, but time, presence, when a leader spends time with their team, it really makes all the difference in the world. I know when I was in leadership, when I was, you know, in organizational leadership, like at United Way, I did my best to really maximize. I put a high priority on the time I spent with my team as a group and one-on-one individual, because I always valued that when coaches and my leaders would spend time with me, I could tell they cared. It was an investment in me. They could, you can fill out the performance appraisal forms and you can even write a nice check to give your employees every week. But the time you spend with them is really why they stay. And it's a top driver of employee engagement. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that's something it's a challenge. It's easy to talk about, but it's so hard to do because as leaders, we have all these different responsibilities, but our biggest responsibility is serving our team.
Yeah. Well, and they're your top asset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And without the team, we can only accomplish so much as an individual. You need your team support, and they need to know they have your support as well. And the only way to do that is time. Absolutely.
Yeah. How did you get onto the leadership development path? What brought you on this journey? Kind of lead us up, briefly, but kind of lead us up to the Goble Group. Like how did that come about? How did you get on this path?
Well, here in central Pennsylvania, there's this little town called Intercourse.
Yeah, that's right.
and there's a little tourist village there called Kitchen Kettle Village.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When I moved to Lancaster County, my first job here out of college was at Kitchen Kettle Village. And it's a phenomenal organization, small family-owned business.
Yep. Know it well. It's a phenomenal place.
It's a great place. I love the family there. But they were very big on professional development and employee growth. Now, it was a retail environment, so, first job out of college, wasn't making any money. And I knew it wasn't a long-term plan. But the one thing I took away from that was always investing in yourself. Because if you're not willing to invest in yourself, why should somebody else? So fast forward a few years, my daughter Dani was 12 days old in the fall of 2010. She was 12 days old and I lost my job. And if you remember back in 2010, technically we're out of recession by the government metrics, but the economy is still in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the process of shutting down my wife's art business because she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And that's, the calling in our lives is parenthood. So we were shutting down her art business and in January 2nd, 2011, I started going out, putting a resume out, utilizing my network, but the economy is still, in the tank. And, the opportunity to partner with John Maxwell pops up, as a founding partner of the John Maxwell team in, February, March, 2011. And I knew if I didn't take that leap then, and make the bet on myself in such a big way, I never would, or the odds of doing it later on would diminish. So losing your job when your daughter's 12 days old, makes you sink or swim pretty quick. And, you've heard the duck analogy maybe before, at the top of the water, the duck looks calm, cool, and collected, but underneath the water, his feet are going a mile an hour or a mile a minute, excuse me. And just the chaos underneath the water, but you got to look calm, cool, and collected up top. And early on of the Goble Group, those first few years, that's what it was. It was calm, cool, and collected on top, out meeting with people, building the business. But underneath the water, man, it was as fast, as quick as possible, and keep it going. But, you bet on yourself.
Well, I met you early on fairly early on in that business, and I didn't get – I don't think the people ever got the impression that it was there was a newness, but it didn't feel new. You presented yourself in a way that made me feel like you'd been doing this all your life. So clearly there was people say fake it till you make it and all of that. but whatever that was, that's part of the leap, isn't it? It's like, I'm all in, I'm going, this is now who I am. It's not, boy, I really wish I was a good coach, or I really, really wish I could run a successful business like other people do it. You just do it and say, okay, I'm running a successful business now. That's what I do.
Yeah. And it's definitely part of the leap, but and I think that leap is what scares a lot of people from making it. But if individuals took time to reflect and sit back and realize, I've been a leader most of my life. I've been in the Boy Scouts. I achieved rank in the Boy Scouts. I was a captain of the lacrosse team through high school. I played lacrosse in college. you know, I led organizations in college. So the leadership aspects, while always being a student of leadership, the leadership aspect for me was always there. I'm just continually trying to refine it and grow it. But whenever you take that leap to a business side of it, there's always going to be those challenges. There's always going to be those fears. And overcoming those fears is what made the difference. Now, that's not to say I'm still not afraid. There's days where I get up and wonder, okay, how are we going to do this? What's going on? But having the confidence in myself and taking that leap to begin with, and that's where leadership kind of is, you know, going into the unknown, knowing where you want to go, but not knowing exactly how to get there. You take it one step at a time. And for me, I'm an old school type of learner, I believe. I need to learn by making mistakes. And, you know, making mistakes is hard. I've made some pretty big ones, some pretty big financial ones. But for me, that's how I learn the best.
Yeah. There's a video that I show a lot by DeWitt Jones, who's a world-class photographer. At one point, one of National Geographic's top photographers, and we use the video in strategic planning. It's about creativity, but he applies creativity to things like business. And one of the things he says is you can't be afraid to make mistakes in order to be extraordinary. And he describes, and this is a dated video, so this is, you know, they're using rolls of film in their cameras, but he says that the average article in a National Geographic magazine, not the magazine, an article in the magazine has about an average of 30 images in it. And that to get those 30 images, photographers go through 400 rolls of film, 14,000 wow. images to get the 30 that go in an article. You're not thinking about mistakes. You're shooting, you know, you're out there, you're doing it, and you shoot enough and you put yourself in the right places and you train your technique enough, you're going to get extraordinary shots, and they're not all going to be extraordinary.
No, and that's the thing I struggle with sometimes even now is that level of perfectionism. You know, I have high standards for myself because my clients expect me to serve them well. And I do my best to get it right the first time every time, but I certainly don't. And you learn from those mistakes. But it's being able to get over that fear and getting back up. You know, I played sports, you know, through high school and a little bit in college, played lacrosse, and I'm a goalie. So you have to have that mindset that after somebody scores on you, you got to let it go. You know, that goal happened. You can't let the next one in.
Yeah,
you
got to
just keep coming back mentally. And that is mental aspect of entrepreneurship and leadership, I believe, is the hardest side of it.
Yeah.
Because if you're a true leader, you want to serve others. You want to support others and be helpful. And you're going to get it wrong. And those times when you do get it wrong, you know, weigh on you sometimes. And it goes back to spending time with your team and building those relationships so that when you do get it wrong with your team, you've invested that time where they understand your good intentions behind it and they're willing to give you grace.
That's really good stuff. And we do use sports analogies a lot, but there's a lot of leadership concepts that are required in sports. It's competition, it's winning, it's excelling, and that's what business is really all about.
Hey, and most sports, it's teams.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, think about, you know, the NHL, the MLB, NBA, NFL. You know, they're all team sports. Now, there's superstars on every team. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest basketball player ever, did not start winning championships with the Bulls until he got his teammates more involved.
Yeah, that's right. Well, even individual sports are team sports.
Yes.
I'm a big Roger Federer fan, for example. Roger's an individual. It's just him and the other person on the other side of the court. But when they win, who's the first group they thank? My team. Because they have a team. They have a team of coaches and trainers mm-hmm. and psychologists and marketers and agents. And they do have a team, even though the team doesn't go out on the court with them.
No, absolutely. And you could always get more accomplished working productively, successfully with the team than you can on your own.
Yep. And the cross side of that is when there's toxicity on your team or incompetence on your team, when there's a broken link, it shows up in the individual performance.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And as a leader, it's your responsibility.
So I'm curious, you are actually this already the second Maxwell coach that we've had on the program. And I'd like to hear from you, and I think our listeners would like to hear. I mean, we know who John Maxwell is. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in the, you know, you're interested in leadership. And if you're interested in leadership, you know who John Maxwell is. And if you don't, go find out really quick. Call Steve. But why Maxwell? Like, what are the key tenets of Maxwell leadership that inspire you and that you feel like are the is the right sort of approach to take in helping the clients that you help? What's the Maxwell thing?
Well, first, why wasn't I the first Maxwell coach? That's what I want to know, Patrick.
Well, because you live up in, you know, Amish country. And we had a guy right here in Columbia, see, that was just, we could just make it quicker. I'll edit that out and come up with a better reason, maybe.
John says leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less.
Yep.
And the power and the importance of positive influence in the lives of others has been hugely important to me, because without influence, leadership is influence. Without influence, without leadership, it's awfully hard to accomplish your goals. When I mentioned Kitchen Kettle Village earlier, and the importance of professional development at that organization, I actually came across John's book, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, his first one. And, you know, I dug into that and loved it. And then later discovered the John Maxwell team, you know, as a founding partner. And it just clicked. It was the right time. And timing plays so much of a difference, not only in relationship building, but opportunities and being able to see opportunities for the long haul. Had I discovered the opportunity to join the John Maxwell team when I was gainfully employed, would I have taken the leap? I don't know. I had previously looked at Dale Carnegie Institute. I looked at other coaching organizations that do things to build you up as an individual. But the biblical foundation that John teaches from was a huge proponent for me, and I love that aspect. But John also keeps things very simple, and in our complicated world, simple leadership principles are easy to remember and easy to teach. And keeping things simple, I mean, there's that acronym KISS. You know, keep it simple, Steve. I don't like the other S word because, you know, as a dad, we don't use that around our house. Mm-hmm. But I'm fortunate my name is Steve, so it's keep it simple, Steve. And John does that. And, he's a ton of resources for us as coaches, and we get to use those resources to serve other people. And yeah, that's one of the things I love about it.
I think it's a smart path because, I've looked into it myself a number of times, just never really pulled the trigger on it, kind of moved in some other directions, but have always followed Maxwell to a degree. The definition of leadership, influence, nothing more, nothing less, is one of the best ever. Is it takes out position, it takes out authority, it's leading from any chair. I really love that. I also love, and I don't want to spend this time talking about Maxwell, but because you're a Maxwell coach, I love the five levels of leadership that Maxwell talks about. And these are different than Jim Collins' five level thing. Maxwell's are more dimensions, I think, of leadership, but it starts from why people follow you. And to a degree, people will follow you because you write the check. I mean, they'll follow you because you have a position over them to a certain degree. But you can only get so far with that. Or they'll follow you because you have a track record and you've proven that you are an expert. And so people are like, well, they're credible, so I'll follow them. Or they'll follow you because you develop them. You invest in them. Or they'll follow you because, and he goes through the continuum, and at the end, it's really, they follow you because of the person you are, and it's the personhood level. And I love that about Maxwell's sort of construct of leadership. And again, I think that's what I get from you. Just when I'm around you, I see that fifth level of leadership, first of all. Would you say that's a key construct of Maxwell's kind of thought process?
Absolutely. And it comes down to relationships.
Yeah.
So, you know, the title of leader gets thrown around so erroneously these days, when there's such a failure, in a number of institutions across our country. But leaders are relationship driven. They're service focused. It's not about them. And that's what I strive to be. You know, I'm not going to be famous. I'm not going to be, you know, a billionaire one day. That's not my focus. It's not my desire. You know, my legacy is going to be father, and then servant leader and husband. And that's what leadership to me is, you know, that influence. The influence I have on my kids right now is so important to me. And you have to live that out. And, you know, by living it out and practicing with my kids, I get to practice it with my clients and those I serve and the community I serve as well.
It's beautiful. I want to, before we have to wrap up, I do want to talk about the book, Discover Your Team's Potential. You started this conversation out talking about teams, and your chapter in this book, this is Proven Principles to Help Engage Your Team and Improve Performance. And your chapter is Understanding Tomorrow's Leaders Today. And yeah. So we've talked about the Maxwell construct of leadership. Let me give you, I want to give you the space to talk about another set of fives that I think is just equally as poignant and really good set of principles for leaders to think about as we lead really across generations. But the five L's of leadership, I really thought that was a great construct in the chapter of this book. Can you walk us through the five L's?
No, absolutely. And the five L's of leadership, I kind of modeled it after John's, you know, from an alliteration standpoint. But the five L's are listen, learn, love, lead, and then let go. Listen, learn, love, lead, let go. And for me, leadership starts with listening. You have to listen to the other people involved. You have to listen to your team. You know, we talked about the importance of teams and making sure that, you know, spending time with them, making them feel heard, making them feel appreciated. You know, it's not always about agreeing with them, or it's not always about making sure you're 100% on the same page all the time. But if people feel that you've listened to them, they're more likely to follow you. They're more likely to agree to move forward, even though it's not the way they might move forward. But you have to listen to them first. And I think that's a challenge we face in today's society with some of the technological aspects. The generational gap that exists in the marketplace, you know, the younger generation doesn't feel listened to. And until we start listening to the younger generation and inviting them to the table on business decisions and involving them in that process, I think we're going to continue to see these challenges.
You know, Steve, we had, I know you know Jim Smith. Dr. Jim Smith is the president of Leadership Systems, and which is sort of the system I've embraced and followed. And he brought an interesting thing to the table that's based on some of his own research with clients, and that is that it works the other way around too, that the older generation of leaders often don't feel listened to anymore. They feel like the younger generation doesn't care what they have to say. Like, we're in a new time, dude. You know, like, you know, your ways are old, and some of them are old and conventional. But I think, would you agree that both sort of ends of the continuum of generations both feel misunderstood and maybe not listened to and appreciated? What could we do if we improve that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, leading across generations is incredibly challenging, but at the same time, it's just, you have to make that time investment and you have to bring them together. And it's, you know, I'd be a billionaire if I figured out how to do it. I haven't figured out how to quite do that quite yet, but I'm working on it here. Yeah. So, and that's part of the leadership responsibility is bringing the groups together that need to have those conversations.
Yeah. And it's not just hear them so that they feel heard. It's listen to understand and learn.
Yeah. So many times we listen to react or to respond versus truly to just listen. We're thinking about our next question. We're thinking about our next statement.
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of just listening to absorb it and then think about it for a few minutes, think about it, you know, okay, how, you know, what is he really trying to say? and we don't dig into those deep coaching questions. And that's where it's valuable to have leaders who are trained in coaching, or have a coach who can help you listen, because of the value of listening to somebody else, again, with positive intention, and with purpose, so that you can come to positive solutions.
Yeah. Take us to the second one. Learn.
Well, when you listen to individuals, inevitably you learn about them. You know, what does Joe like versus what does Jane like? Because we're all made differently. We all have different goals. We all have different ideas of what should be or what could be. And we all have different focuses in life, which, you know, none of them are bad and none of them are wrong, because we're all unique individuals. But we have to learn about them. We can't just be fake on the surface, where we send somebody a birthday card once a year because we know it's their birthday. You know, and I'm not saying that is bad in and of itself.
Right.
But don't just have that be your thing.
Yeah.
Well, I send a birthday card to everybody every year. Well, that's, you know, that's the bare minimum, as you should be doing. And if you do the bare minimum through life, you're not going to get very far. But again, it goes back to that time. You have to make that time investment as a leader to learn about your team. Learn, okay, what are their fears? How can you help them overcome their fears? And when you learn about them, you have to help identify potential solutions or potential resources for them so that they can go accomplish their goals. And you have to spend that time listening to do that, because you can't learn about them until you listen to them.
Well, I like that you're framing the learning part in terms of learning about your people. And there's also the learning of your work. I mean, you have to be an expert in your field. You know, you really, so for a leader who might be an established CEO or business owner, that the learning doesn't stop there. You have to keep up with the current trends in business, and you have to keep up with, if you're a nonprofit leader, like the ones that, that I coach, and you're working in early childhood or you're working in homelessness, well, you need to learn about not only what the trends and the realities are, but what some of the solutions are and what the research says. And so it's difficult for leaders, though, to carve out that time to learn, because we feel like that's something we just don't have time for. If I've got time on the weekends, maybe I'll read, or I can't afford to go to a conference, or that's back to that investing in yourself you talked about.
Yeah. And you know, one of the challenges I think that's in the marketplace now, like you said, is time, but the lack of intentionality and the complacency that exists. If you look at all the most successful leaders, and success is a metric that everybody needs to define for themselves. Okay, I'm not here to tell you how to be successful. You need to define success for yourself as a listener, and then go achieve it. But part of that achieving success comes through continuous learning. So many people get a college degree and say, you know, I got a degree, I'm done. So many people get a certificate and are done learning. But the truly successful people that have, you know, on appearance base, they have it all together, are continual learners. Once you stop learning, you are done. I whatever industry you're in, whatever field you're in, once you stop learning, you are done. Mm. And that includes learning about your team. You have to make that a priority. You have to be intentional about it.
Yeah. And I don't know if the five L's are in a particular order, but I like the order that they're in. And the next one is love.
Yeah, they are in an intentional order. I did that on purpose, because that's the system. I mean, systems make things better, make things go. Mm-hmm. That's how you improve things. And you do have to show people love. You know, again, I grew up as a single parent household. I always knew my mom loved me despite the challenges we had. But some people don't get love at home. Some people get, you know, need love or need to be shown that appreciation. And I'm not talking about love in any kind of, you know, male-female relationship aspect, but just, you know, appreciation, you know, discussions, that feeling that you get when you understood it, and you can have these tough conversations with individuals, and you can, you know, show, you know, give them love in a way that makes them feel appreciated. And it's hard to describe. You just have it with some people, and other people, you got to work harder at it. But in a team environment, you have to love the team, because it's, again, it's the team that makes things go around versus the individuals.
My favorite part about this part of the book, you write about, I'm assuming it's kitchen kettle, in your story. It might not be, but you talk about, a place that had, it was selling handcrafted furniture, and maybe that wasn't kitchen kettle.
No, that okay. was kitchen kettle.
It was. Okay. So
yeah,
you talk about how the furniture, here's the word you use. You say the furniture was meticulously built, stained, and loved. So this is in your section on love. The first thing about love is, you know, you have to love your work. You have to love your product. You have to love, you know, I love that you put love of the furniture in there. Now, the story was really about a sales mistake you made and how your leader displayed the love of correcting you and leading you and helping you grow in that way. But the idea that it started with them loving their work and loving their product, cherishing it. Love is not just about an individual and showing emotion to somebody.
Right. And, you know, it's so much easier when you love what you do. And it's a cliche, and I hate cliches, but more often than not, they're accurate. I do my best not to use them much. But loving what you do doesn't mean you're going to love it every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's still work to be done. There's still things within my business that I hate doing. Some things I've been able to outsource, not everything quite just yet, that I don't like doing that need to be done, but you have to love what you're doing. And then you have to love people when they make a mistake. That was a huge mistake I made. I knew nothing about, you know, the furniture industry. Yeah. And, a little bit of backstory real quick. The owner of the business I was working for had just bought out a space. The gentleman was retiring, and the gentleman did this handcrafted furniture. So my boss at the time bought out his inventory, bought out his space, and I was tasked with getting rid of it. And this was maybe 2 weeks into the job, and I hadn't yet a price sheet yet. And it was a beautiful handcrafted oak desk that should have sold, I think, for like $2,500, $3,000. I sold it for $500. I was excited. I didn't, you know, this is my first quote unquote real job out of college. And I knew nothing about handcrafted furniture. I'm not from, you know, the Amish country here. It was a beautiful desk, and you know, it was a huge financial mistake. I did not get fired over that, thankfully, because again, you know, my boss recognized that it was an honest mistake, and he showed me the grace, showed me the love. And I ended up working there for close to 4 years, and had that interaction gone differently, I may not have lasted that long.
Yeah. That's a part of serving people is, correcting them and growing them and helping them improve and do better. So I love that. So the last two sound a little bit at odds to people that don't have a construct of leadership in their own minds. And that is number four is lead. Number five is let go. Talk about those two, reconcile that for us.
Well, leadership and leading is a verb. It requires action. It's not something you can talk about. You have to do it, and you have to display it on every day time frame. You know, so you're always, you know, as a leader, you're always leading. And leadership, first and foremost, starts with yourself. But it doesn't mean you're a perfect leader in all ways. So that's what lead is. It's an action. It's a verb. You got to move forward. Letting go, sometimes we still have, part of our leadership is delegating and letting go of responsibilities or letting go of individuals maybe who want to do something different, want to do their own thing, or who maybe made a decision that we might not have made that same exact way, but because we did delegate it, we just have to let go sometimes. And unfortunately, as a leader, sometimes that literally means letting go of team members simply because they're not fit for the goals that we have as an organization. They're not, you know, in love with the job they're doing. They're not willing to learn, or they're not willing to listen to their teammates. And all of this comes back to again, being a leader, you have to make those tough decisions to hold team members accountable and let go of things mentally when they don't go your way. Much easier talked about and written about in a book than lived out in a daily life, I think. And that includes me.
Well, that's right. But that's why we read, and that's why we do podcasts, and that's why we coach about it, because It is easier said than done, but we've got to remind ourselves of these things. We have to put them in our brains. We have to tell ourselves these things, be aware of them in the moment. And so I appreciate that you have taken the time to lay out such a useful framework and a toolkit for leaders to think about. You know, these are the kinds of things you put on a, you know, a post-it note on top of your computer monitor, you know, the five L's. I mean, just remind yourself of those things as you walk down your hallways and as you walk into your staff's offices or go out into the field on a field visit or whatever that might look like. Thinking about those five L's, you got to be aware of them until the point where they become habit. And that's really sort of what the coaching is all about, is help people be aware of behaviors to the point where they can change their behaviors to the level of where they become habit. And I know we're running out of time because I know you've got people to go lead and teach, but question I ask everybody on this program, tell me one or two people in your early career or life that you would say helped shape your view of leadership. What made them great leaders or not? Maybe you learned from a not great leader about your view of leadership in life, but who were those early people for you?
Well, there's a lot of early leadership, but there's two specific, you know, folks I want to talk about. First was Kirk Venequattro. In the lacrosse world, Kirk Venequattro is a legend. He is he's a high school coach in Carthage, New York. And he was my first lacrosse coach back when I started playing lacrosse in fourth grade. And he taught me a lot about, setting the tone for hard work, not being afraid, and doing things the right way. When I started playing lacrosse in fourth grade, I was an attackman, which means I got to be on offense and on the field quite a bit. But in sixth grade, he approached me and said, "Hey, we need a goalie. I need the best athlete I have on my team to be a goalie. And right now that's you. But I don't know if you know anything about lacrosse. I know you're a sports guy, but those lacrosse balls kind of hurt you." And
they sting.
They do. But you know, that confidence he displayed in me early on as a sixth grader, you know, he was my gym teacher as well. He coached the high school kids, but he was a gym teacher in the school district. And that's, you know, and that confidence he displayed in me and then in gym class, teaching things the right way and pushing forward. You know, I played lacrosse. I played Division I lacrosse in college as a goalie. And, you know, he set the tone specifically with lacrosse. And again, you know, grew up in a single parent household. And he was truly a positive father figure in my life. And I'm always very appreciative, you know, Kirk Venequattro. We called him Coach 2-4. He was a huge influence. I used his coaching style when I coached lacrosse here a few years ago locally. And then my Boy Scout leaders in Maine, the middle of my junior year of high school, we moved from upstate New York to Maine, where lacrosse was not really as big as it was in New York. I still played, but when I moved to Maine, my Boy Scout leaders, Mike and Karen Barone, were huge influences. Mike helped me get my Eagle Scout, and something I'm very proud of, achieving that rank of Eagle Scout. And without Mike's, you know, positive reinforcement and positive pressure, I wouldn't have gotten Eagle Scout. And his wife at the time, Karen, you know, she I didn't do drugs in high school because I was more scared of Karen than my mom. and as a high school kid, there was a lot of opportunities, you know, but Karen, you know, was a positive influence as well. And, you know, she was into sports and, you know, she had that athlete mentality and you know, always pushed me hard. And one thing that I'm really proud of that relationship is their kids call me Uncle Steve still to this day. And, you know, both those kids are now in college. It's those relationships that set the tone early on in my life that helped me become the person I am today. Because then nobody accomplishes anything great alone. And Kirk Venequattro and Mike and Karen Barone definitely helped set the tone for me as a young individual, as a young leader, with moving forward and setting, being great examples.
Wow. Those are inspiring. Those are people that gave you the chance to fail. You know, it's like, give me the chance. put some confidence in me. I think great leaders put confidence in people that they might even look at and say, they're not ready yet, but they got to get ready at some point. So they're going to fall. They're going to fail and falter, but they're ready to be sort of nudged out there. And those are the leaders that stretch us and make us think of things that are possible that we wouldn't have thought were possible on our own. That's kind of what I pick up there.
And that's the leader I try to be. You have to give people a chance. And I want to share a quick anecdote. A cartoon I saw recently. I saw it online. I don't remember who it was from. I wish I remember who it was from. But it shows a father with a young girl. You know, it's, you know, like a Sunday cartoon kind of thing, not a full length TV show. But in the first box, it shows a daughter, a dad with his daughter, and she wants to use some tools, some hand tools, to go fix something, make a birdhouse, something as a kid. And then he gives them to her. And in the next screen, there's another adult talking with the father about that's not going to end well. Because it's a young girl, you know, 7 or 8 in the cartoonish. And in the third box, the father disagrees, says, no, I disagree with that statement. I don't think it will start well. And then the fourth box of the cartoon is, you know, the father's much older and the young girl is also much older, but she has a tool belt around her waist with some tools in it. And she's, you know, the implication is that, yes, we're going to fail when we start, but by giving people that confidence, by giving people that opportunity, the start is going to look ugly, but potentially the end result is something amazing.
Oh, that's great. I wish you knew that. If you find it again, send it to me. That's awesome.
I will. I wish I paid closer attention to who wrote it, you know, who did that cartoon. but that's what leadership is about. It's not going to start well all the time, and you're going to make mistakes along the way. But the end result over time
Good stuff.
Is where it's going to make a difference.
Good stuff. So I don't know if you've already maybe given us a hint to this. If so, you can repeat it. But as we wrap this up, what's the number one piece of advice that you have? What is the Steve Goebel one piece of advice for leaders today, particularly younger leaders?
Never stop learning. You just can't stop learning. Once you learn, you're done. Always be learning.
Well, I learned from you today, Steve, and I do every time I'm with you. I appreciate your spirit, your service, your expertise, your commitment to quality for the clients that you serve, your service in your community, and more than anything, your friendship, and for carving out time today to share this great thought with our listeners. Just thanks a million.
Thanks for the opportunity to join you on the Leadership Window. I appreciate it, my friend.
All right, folks, episode 9 in a couple of days. Thanks for joining us, and go lead on.